accession number 11105, Mr. M. McBain, Reel 1.
Colonel M. McBain, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Colonel?
I was born in Edinburgh on the 1st of October 1930.
Were you the only child in the family?
I was the first child of the family, yes.
And brothers and sisters?
And then two brothers later on, two brothers 4 years after I was born. They were twins.
What did your father do?
My father was in the army. He was a musician in the army, and when I was born, he was bandmaster of the 2nd Battalion of the King's Royal Rifle Corps, who at that time was stationed in Belfast.
And was there a military tradition throughout your family?
No, he was the first one to join.
What did your mother do?
She was just mother and housewife.
What kind of area did you live in?
Well, being an army family, we moved from place to place. In Belfast, for example, we in fact lived in what would nowadays be called a hiring. It was a private house. It wasn't in the barracks. And from memory, it was in a reasonable part of Belfast. And in fact, having been back since, it was in a reasonable suburb of Belfast. But obviously, at that age, memory is a bit hazy, to say the least. We moved from there just after my brothers were born in Belfast in 1934. We moved from there to Aldershot. The battalion moved from Belfast to Aldershot. I can remember that move, strangely enough. I can remember arriving at Ashvale Station, which is near Aldershot, presumably on a special train, and it was inevitably at night. The army always seems to move at night. And we moved into a barracks in Aldershot, Salamanca Barracks, and I was put to bed as soon as we got to the house, and I can remember very hard army sheets and blankets, and then in the morning being woken up and told in fact we were in the wrong house. We should have been in another house, which as fate would have it was called Belfast Cottages. It was in the Salamanca Barracks. And that's where we stayed until about 1937.
What were army family quarters like? Was the accommodation good?
I think by comparison, probably with outside accommodation, yeah, very good. There was sturdily built houses and well furnished and so on. I think since then, in army housing generally is pretty good. There are variations, there are the exceptions, but by and large it's pretty good.
So you grew up basically on an army camp?
Yeah.
Or camps?
Yes.
And did the life suit you? Did you enjoy it?
Yes, because of course one didn't know anything else. One just accepted it, that was the way one lived. I, from Salamanca Barracks, when I was of school age, I went to a little day prep school on the other side of Aldershot, and was taken there every day by I'm not sure. I certainly didn't go myself, whether it was my mother or my father, I don't know. I suspect my father. to this little prep school on the other side of Aldershot. But yes, I mean, one's life revolved round the barracks and the army. One day, I remember we just had the lawn relaid and reseeded, and the seed was coming through, the grass was coming through. At the bottom of the hill were the officers' stables, bearing in mind this was 1935-36, when certainly company commanders and so on would be mounted officers. For some reason there were mules in that stable as well, battalion mules. One of the mules got out and was galloping around the barracks and came into our garden all over the newly seeded lawn. I can remember being very upset about it. But as I say, yeah, I mean, the whole life really revolved around being in the barracks. At school, thinking about it now, were civilian children, so that was a leavening of the military background. And then in 1937, we moved out of barracks, and my parents took a house, a civilian house, in Aldershot.
Was it a comfortable life as a child?
Yes, yes. There was no stress or strain about it. Yes, it was. It was a very secure life. I mean, when one thinks about it, certainly in the early 30s and mid 30s, one realizes now outside there are all sorts of industrial strife and unemployment and so on, but of course that didn't impinge at all.
And your schooling that you mentioned, did you recall the name of the schools that you went to?
Yes, it was called the Oaks. And it was later, a lot later, flattened by a flying bomb and disappeared.
And how long did you stay at that school?
I was there until we left Aldershot in 1940. My father, in fact, in 1938, became bandmaster of the Royal Artillery Mounted Band, which was also in Aldershot. And he stayed with them all through the war. But in 1940, we moved out of Aldershot because the band was moved to Harrogate. And we, as a family, mother and my two brothers and myself, moved to Edinburgh, where we lived fairly uncomfortably in a small house. Again, thinking about it now, at the time, it didn't really, it didn't mean anything, but thinking about it now, it must have been a great squash. Anyway, we moved in with my father's brother and both unmarried brother, unmarried sister, my mother, two brothers and myself. And I went to George Heriot School. In fact, all three of us went to George Heriot School in Edinburgh for a year. My father, at this time, was moving around the country with the band, playing concerts to troops, wherever, all over the country. I remember him coming home on, I don't know whether it was leave or just a visit to Edinburgh, having just come back from Scarpa Flow, where he'd been playing concerts on all the big ships in Scarpa Flow. And we then moved from there down to Harrogate. But perhaps I should, if we can stop there for a moment, perhaps if we could go back from Edinburgh for a while, just back to Aldershot, at the age of 9, 10, the war didn't impinge on us at all, other than the fact my father was away. There was no bombing. I think 3 bombs fell on Aldershot while we were there, one of which dropped on the naffy in Salamanca barracks, which of course caused us quite a lot of excitement. But there's a long way away, and it must have been a very small bomb, thinking about it. But I do remember being taken out one night. Why, I don't know, but we were. We did sleep under the staircase for a while. I remember that. Because aircraft bombers were going across Aldershot on their way to London. I suspect that was the reason. Being taken out, and we could see in the sky, we could see London burning and Portsmouth, both of which had been fairly heavily bombed that particular night. And then when we moved from Aldershot to Edinburgh, it was friends who took us to Aldershot Station. We were put on a train. Some other friends in London met us in London and took us across London from Waterloo to King's Cross, and I was aware of damage, and the friend was pointing out damage to buildings and so on, bomb damage, on the way between the stations. And then we went up to Edinburgh.
Were you aware, in Aldershot, in those early years of the war, first year or so of the war, of the great influx of soldiers around you?
Yes, one of the things I do remember was, when my father was still in Aldershot, war having broken out, was the arrival of the 1st Canadian Division. And I didn't know it as the 1st Canadian Division at that time, obviously. It was a lot of Canadian soldiers. But Aldershot appeared to empty of British soldiers. In fact, yeah, it did empty. They'd all gone out to France and then back through Dunkirk and so on. And while all that was going on, the Canadians were coming in. And so at that time, I remember Aldershot being full of Canadian troops. And it was, I think, I gathered later, it was the 1st Canadian Division who came into Aldershot. But I do, you know, again, it's amazing what you think of when you go back. I mean, I can remember my father, when we were still in Aldershot, being very involved with people coming back from Dunkirk, and with the band and so on. And he took me, again, for some reason, I'm thinking about it now, I don't know why he should, but he did. He took me. And there's a very famous army race course near Aldershot called Tweedledown, where they had point, they still do nowadays, have point to points and so on. And that was obviously a gathering place or an RV or something for people coming back from Dunkirk. And he was out there nearly every day with a band, and he took me one day, and so I did actually see people arriving straight from Dunkirk into this big, it was a tented camp, obviously, and being sorted out by, I can't remember any detail at that sort of age. The only thing I remember was my father being distressed because his former regiment, 2nd Battalion 60th, of course, were one of the battalions at Calais. Nearly all his friends and his officers and so on were captured at Calais, killed or captured at Calais. And I remember that upsetting my father. So that was that bit at Aldershot, and I really can't remember an awful lot more about.
As a young boy, were these disasters beginning to register with you? Did you know of any of the importance of Dunkirk? Or?
Not really, no. I mean, it really had no impact. because it didn't have any direct impact on the family. If my father had been killed or captured, then yes, obviously it would have done, but fortunately he wasn't.
Your education would continue up in Edinburgh. Where did you go there?
Went to George Heriot School in Edinburgh, which was an experience in itself, because although having been born in Edinburgh, my parents were both from Edinburgh. As far as Heriot's was concerned, I was English, because I spoke with an English accent. And thinking about it now, the teacher that we had in the class in Heriot's was a rabid Scottish nationalist. And there were, I suppose, about half a dozen of us in this class who'd come from England. I think the others were actually English, but... and he gave us stick, this guy, you know, and every possible opportunity he was telling us what a terrible place England was and what a marvellous place Edinburgh was. It's very strange thinking about it now. It was where I started playing rugby, and we used to play rugby every Saturday against the other schools, and fortunately I was quite good at it. And so I enjoyed that, and that made up for this slight unhappiness in the classroom. But at that age, one gets over things fairly quickly. My brothers didn't appear to have any problems. They were, of course, in the junior school, where things may not have been the same.
What was the discipline like in school?
It's difficult to say, because, of course, it was the only thing we knew. And I suppose it was the... It'd be wrong to say Victorian, because it's a long time after that, but it was fairly strict. I mean, the teacher had a strap, and any misdemeanours, you got the strap. This particular man also had a 12-inch ruler, a thick 12-inch ruler, that he would wrap your knuckles with. So there was not a lot, but there certainly was physical corporal punishment. And any other more serious misdemeanors that he couldn't deal with, off you went to the headmaster. That really was bad news.
Do you recall the quality of the education that you were getting?
Yeah, again, of course, at that age you didn't really think about it, but looking back on it now, yeah, it was pretty good. You were very well grounded in the basics. There was nothing very fancy about it. I was, in fact, only there for just over a year, I suppose. But without being too nationalistic, I think Scottish education was regarded as being very good at that time, and I have no reason to doubt that it didn't do me a lot of good.
You said then that you moved to Harrogate.
We then came down to Harrogate, where my father was still based, and we moved into a rented house, and by that time I was of the age and went to Harrogate Grammar School. That was a bit of a culture shock, because it was a mixed school, and they played football. Soccer. But apart from that, again, thinking about it, I suppose, you asked about Scottish education. The Scottish education must have been pretty good, because I went into the top stream at Harrogate Grammar School. I was in the A class or form, whatever it was, you know, there was 2 A, B, C, D. I was in the A form, without any apparent effort on my part. But we were there for 2 years. I remember while we were in Harrogate, I can remember hearing about the Allied landings in North Africa in 1942, whenever it was in 1942, but I can remember that, hearing about that. And then it must have been very soon after that that we moved to Richmond in Yorkshire.
You changed schools again?
Changed schools again to Richmond School in Yorkshire, Richmond Grammar School. And that's where I stayed from then on. Again, my brothers, they were still below grammar school age. But we moved into, we rented a house in Richmond. My father was then in Catterick, still with the same band, and touring from there all over the place with the band. Richmond was one of the old traditional grammar schools, and I just followed the path through there up to school certificate. And then, by that stage, it was after the war. The war finished 1945. So I would be at school certificate age then. No, that's 16, isn't it? School certificate. I'd take the school certificate in 1946. And it was at that time, obviously living in Richmond, beside Catterick Garrison, you were in a military environment again. I can remember Churchill tanks driving through Richmond on training, driver training. How the place didn't fall down, I don't know.
Did you stay on for the sixth form?
Yes, I did. And it was at about that stage of the proceedings that the first boy from Richmond School appeared back from Sandhurst on leave from Sandhurst. His father was in the army stationed in Catterick, and John King appeared in all his glory from Sandhurst. And he, in fact, was intake one of the post-war Sandhurst. I had decided I wanted to go into the army, which is hardly surprising, but I hadn't really thought about how or where or when or what as. And this is where I think that sort of school was very good, quite apart from its scholastic sporting and every other activities. I mean, the headmaster to us was a fearsome old fellow. He was obviously extremely good at his job, but he was a formidable man. But nevertheless, I had the confidence in him to go to him after I'd taken the school certificate and done reasonably well in the school certificate and was going on to higher school certificate. And said, I want to join the army. And he said, well, have you thought about how or what? And I said, well, no, I haven't really. And it was he who had no service experience at all. He just accepted straight away that because of my background, that was a natural progression. And it was he who said, well, why don't you do what John King has done and go to Sandhurst? I mean, I just hadn't thought about it. It was he who sowed that particular seed. It was then a question at that time of, as far as academic qualifications for Sandhurst were concerned, it was either higher school certificate or the civil service entrance exam. Well, I was halfway through to higher school certificate, and so it was decided I'd try that way. In fact, that wasn't a howling success. I think memory had to take four subjects, and I got two of them. And in those days, with school certificate and higher school certificate, if you didn't get the lot, you went back to square one. It was like snakes and ladders. I got two. So it was then, well, let's have a go at the civil service exam, which I did. Had I left school by then? Yeah, I think, you see, I took higher school certificate and then left. I stayed on at Richmond to do this. My parents, in fact, 1947, went back to Aldershot. And I stayed on as a boarder in Richmond to take higher school certificate. And took the exam and then presumably left that summer. Got the results at home. And then realised I would have to take the civil service exam. And so I did a bit of swatting and so on. I mean, arithmetic or maths had always been a problem. And I seem to remember I did go to night school in Farnborough to do something about maths, and then took the civil service exam, which I passed. I had to go up to London to take that. Sat in a great big hall in Westminster and took that. And then, having passed that, was summoned to the Regular Commission Board, the RCB, which at that time was in a place called Knapp Castle in Sussex. And the group that I went with, I mean, you turned up there, and we were all schoolboys, basically, from a wide variety of schools. Thing that impressed me was that one of my group at RCB, his parents owned Knapp Castle. That was by the way. I passed the RCB.
And was that again an examination?
No, it was a 3-day selection board.
What kind of things did you do over those 3 days?
Well, there was group tasks. Getting a barrel over a crocodile-infested river with a bit of rope and a plank, that sort of thing. Group discussions, lecturettes. I do remember the group task being particularly painful because I was always the smallest and lightest in our group, and so I was always the one who was thrown across things or hoyed up the top of a pole, or I had to climb the rope or whatever it was, but that was all right. And it was all, in fact, from memory, we just accepted all this. There was no pressure that I can remember. And we were all there. And we all wanted to pass, obviously. But I can't remember any great pressure as such. You just did it. It was all a natural progression. And after I think it was lunchtime on the third day, you were summoned one by one in front of the president of the board, who just said, you passed or you failed. And I'd passed and got home, and I was top of the pops in the family. They were very pleased. Again, I think I just accepted it that I'd been a bit surprised if I didn't for some reason. But that's not conceit. I really just hadn't thought about it very much. I just thought, well, you pass the exam, you're going to do this, you're going to Sandhurst.
Your family were obviously pleased because of their own military.
Yes, they were pleased. And, of course, at that time, if I can just remind you, my father, in fact, you see, was still a warrant officer. He was not commissioned at that stage. And so that was another. He realised, as far as he was concerned, it was a bigger step for me than I thought. I just accepted it as part of the system because I'd seen my contemporaries and my colleagues, my friends all doing it, so I was going to do it as well. But to him, who had by that time... we're talking about 40. I mean, he had spent 30-odd years in the army. as a warrant, as a soldier, non-commissioned. So it was a great achievement, and that was nice, and that was fine. But then there was a spell of inactivity before I actually went to Sandhurst, because in those days, and I think it's a great shame they still don't do it, having gone through the academic examination and the selection board, we then had to serve 6 months as private soldiers in a regiment or somewhere. As I say, I think, so I went through the whole enlistment procedure as a private soldier, and I went to the... Why I went to Reading, I can't think from Aldershot whether there was... I can't believe there wasn't a recruiting office in Aldershot. But I didn't. I went to Reading. I was told to go to Reading. So I went to Reading and enlisted. And I, in fact, enlisted as a Cameron Highlander for no other reason that if I was going to go away, I'd get right away. I became Private McBain in the Cameron Highlanders.
Had you been given a choice of regiments when you went to enlist?
You joined in. You enlisted at the recruiting office in anything you liked.
And you were enlisting as a regular private soldier.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether it was some special engagement. The reason being that technically, you see, at Sandhurst you were a private soldier. And I think there was some, was it an S engagement? It had a letter, an S or an R,